Power up there, baby. Now it's up there where it belongs. Test 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3. There we go. Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Welcome Tampa Bay down there too. 1340 Tantalk Radio and 1340 and 1400 AM. So anyway, I'm going to do a seminar series today. I'm going to do tape 16 B over because the amplitude levels were a little low last week and I wasn't satisfied with how it came out. We've only got two more hours left anyway of the tape series. We want to welcome, thank Steve Barish for a great show last night. We had a lot of call-ins, a lot of internet activity. It was a real smasher. And next week, of course, we won't be on the air. It'll be archiving stuff because we'll be up at the conference in May. So this will be a repeat of the last half of last week because of the clarity. And then we're going to go on into tape 17A today, which will get us in towards the very end of the seminar series. And on BBS Radio is the only place you could get it at no charge. So anyhow, let's get Dr. Fred Bell queued up here. He's ready to go. And we don't want to miss a word of this stuff, do we?
Nope.
This is the May 26th Sunday show, the new location of the new hour.
Now, one of the things you've heard me mention earlier is the device that I got from Sannyasi in 1982 called the Omnion. And it is used with our systems because it's a doorway opening. It behaves sort of like the laser does in the fact that it is a doorway to different dimensions. It uses it as an interdimensional doorway in our system. For example, in the system's three, with the seven radiators, you place it right in the center, and we move it up and down with the moon cycles. Even though it helps relieve the energy, the negative energy that comes through on the master crystal, the Omnion also brings a positive energy down from the fourth dimension of the astral plane. We use it as a radionic transmitting device also with a single system. Like if you're set up with a self-help system with one irradiator, you would mount the Omnion behind the single irradiator at the exact center point, and you would have the irradiator point away from the Omnion towards you. So it would be the Omnion hanging, then the irradiator pointing towards you, and then you on a bed where you're sleeping or a pyramid where you're meditating in or whatever. It provides a constant output of energy of even polarity both day and night, so it stabilizes the hydrogen atom frequencies in the body that are always, even though they're switching through their normal phase of the morning to the afternoon to night to midnight to the next day, the sound and polarity light shift that takes place in the hydrogen atom is occurring. It's stabilized when this is according to Sannyasi, this device taps into the powers beyond the parameters of our physical universe. This design, of course, was given to me back on Christmas Day in 1982. There's several of these Omnions in the world. We use several different types of crystal configurations with them now. We use amethyst in the center. We use Arkansas quartz in the top part and the bottom part of it. And sometimes we will use South American quartz in the bottom part now, and Arkansas quartz in the top, which gives it a clockwise, counterclockwise, or figure eight type of energy field when it's put into operation. Because remember, the water goes counterclockwise south of the equator, and any crystal formed in that area, because silicon dioxide has a lot of water in it, crystal, of course, is formed in water, it's going to have an opposite counter-rotating polarity field to it. So the two polarities working through amethyst, one positive, one negative, is a tremendous field or rush into these parameters that are beyond our physical universe. We use lasers with it. Lasers work very well with the Omnion. A typical system will have 10, 15, 20 lasers in it. And it's not that expensive to put that many lasers in. People think, well, that costs a lot, but it doesn't. When you start seeing the results of that many lasers and what you can do with a system, it's truly amazing. The Omnion is one of my favorite things. We usually, when we do seminars, we try to have one with us. They're difficult to construct. They're hand-built, and it takes several hours to build one. It's not something you can just throw together overnight. Another thing that happened to me when I was living in Germany, I've always been working in veils. Now, of course, all these different devices that we make will help bring down a veil. And a veil is what I talked about earlier before the meditation and during. It's just an energy field that where mass consciousness hasn't been able to reach with their eyesight yet. And eventually when the energy field goes into the veil, the eyesight of mankind opens and he physically sees through higher occult more eyes, you might say. And you can teach your body to see up onto the etheric planes with a device that we developed to help speed this process up called the Champagne Reflector. Now, I first got the idea for it when I was living at Ammersee Lake in Germany back in 1987 or 88. And when I was living there, one night we were, up in the Bavarian Alps, and this is a lake where we lived on the middle, in the middle of a lake, on the edge of the middle of a lake. The lake's about 10 miles long, maybe about 4 or 5 miles wide. Big, long, narrow lake, and we were right in the center of it. Well, about 2.5 miles out into the middle of the lake, one day appeared this, in the evening rather, appeared this huge, very large fog bank about 200 feet high, but it just went through the center of the lake, meaning that you could see clearly out to the fog bank, which went from one end of the lake to the other, and you could see beyond the fog bank on the other side. And on the other side of the fog bank was the moon, and the moon was shining into the fog bank, which was probably maybe a quarter of a mile or an eighth of a mile tall, 2 miles out and 10 miles long in the center of this lake. It was like a giant, somebody put a giant movie screen in the middle of the lake. It was a very, very unusual phenomenon for me anyway. Maybe for Germany it's common, but I'd never seen anything like that before. The moon, of course, was behind it. So it gave the appearance of a backlit movie screen in the center of a lake that was the length of the lake. And of course this lake is very long and very old rather, and it was probably formed back when the Ice Age was going across the earth. A lot of those old lakes in Europe were formed during that time, so they're million-year-old crater-type lakes. Well, anyway, I saw this huge bunch of, this army of knights riding across the lake. On the screen, actually in the screen, and they were riding like they were going from the north to the south, and they had lances, and they were holding the lances straight up, and they had suits of armor on, and they had flags on their lances, but I couldn't read the insignias on the flags. And there's some pretty famous lakes, and there were some pretty famous battles fought back during the medieval times around these lakes. So what I figured is it was just some kind of a time shift had taken place. And we were, and what was being projected up on this screen or this fog bank was an image of a battle that had taken place a long time ago. So I went in to get my wife, wake her up, but so she could see it too. But she was in a very deep sleep. By the time I got her awake, this phenomenon had passed and transpired. It was really amazing. So I decided, whatever the conditions, there had to be certain astrological conditions prevalent during the full moon with the lake the way it was, the fog bank the way it was, to make it possible to see all these things happen. So I did some channeling the next day, and I said, why not develop a device that will speed this condition up in the human instrument to the point that even though the conditions aren't quite right for this to happen naturally, you might be able to see it anyway. Or when I say conditions quite right for it to happen naturally, for it naturally to be projected to a lower mind on the physical plane. Same thing had happened a few years before that when I was up in Aspen, Colorado at Bluebells, and the sannyasi had led me up the mountain pass and showed me an etheric city that was up there. And of course the road was shut off because those roads up in the upper Rocky Mountain area get shut off because the snow, they can't, there's too much, too deep of snow, and so these roads are empty, and so you end up going across these mountaintops at night on foot, and you won't see another soul for 10 miles. because all the roads are closed, nobody lives there anyway. Well, I found this etheric city that she showed me, and it was real interesting, and the fact that it was guarded by white wolves, and I was able to see the city lights from a distance across the field. And she said, I could tell that if I had been fearful of this, the wolves would probably have been a menace, but I knew that everything was okay, and then the wolves stayed at a great distance, but they were there, and you could hear them howl from time to time, see them in the moonlight. It was a bright moon that night, too. Seems like that during the full moon period, these etheric veils come down. The full moon period is not the best time to do new age kinds of things for programming and that, but it really is a great time to see all kinds of interesting etheric and astral phenomenon going on that become somewhat visible and illuminated. And of course, as I said, as more mass mind becomes illuminated, the more of these things are going to become apparent. And those of us that are using things like the champagne reflector are going to be leading the pack, and we're going to be seeing things long before others do. And other people are starting to have these experiences. Another example of the veils would be over in the area of Avalon, in the place where Avalon used to exist and King Arthur lived, in Cornwall, England, and across the Salisbury Plains over there. That whole area was once, there was a lot of series of lakes, and the Tor, I guess, is still there because we have it in our video series. You can actually see the Glastonbury Tor. But at one point, this was like an island, and you'd have to cross the lake to get to it. And when you crossed the lake with one consciousness, you'd end up at a lamasery where the old monks were working. And if you'd cross the same lake and land at the same exact spot in another veil, another consciousness, you'd end up in Avalon where Morgan Le Fay and Vivian and Merlin and all these people sort of lived. So here's another situation that was very famous about veils and changing consciousness and getting slightly out of dimension. And the same thing, of course, I pointed out earlier is Shambhala on White Island. Also, is a very good area and a good consciousness to study. So the champagne reflector, it goes into your house. It's kind of an automated device. When it's permanently installed, it has a large piece of double terminated quartz cluster in it. And when we always tell people to mount it in their living rooms or bedrooms, wherever they want it, at this highest possible position that they get in the house, because it seems to work good in a high point in the house. And what we do is we hook a laser some distance away from it and point the laser directly at the stone that's inside the champagne reflector. And we put the laser on a timer so that when the sun sets, the laser goes on. And when the sun rises, the laser goes off. And we adjust the timer. You can buy these timers in any hardware store. Turn the laser off and on. We adjust the timer to compensate for the summer, the longer days in the summer, and the shorter days in the winter. And what happens over a period of time with this energy field constantly going on and off like it does, it starts to change your consciousness and your awareness, and it starts to lift your visual abilities to see in other dimensions. And it's really neat. Sometimes I'll get up in the middle of the night and go into the living room, because I have to go through the living room or by the living room to get to the kitchen to get a midnight snack, and I'll see this thing on, and it's tremendous the effect that you feel around it and the things that you see around it. And I've got in my slideshows that people see. During the light show, we've actually seen angels materialize inside the quartz, fly out of the quartz, and move across the room. We've actually been able to film this, and I have it in my slideshow at the seminars. So these are some of the kinds of things that you can do with a champagne reflector. It's another device strictly to help the body realize its ability to see through veils, but it works very conjunctly with all of our systems equipment. I mentioned earlier, I've talked about the systems three, the quad system, the pyramid over the bed, the Omnion, and the champagne reflector. I just want to briefly get back into the Firestar Orb. The Firestar Orb is an excellent system also to use at night in your sleeping area. It's tremendously intense. It might be a little bit intense to sleep in over a long period of time, or some people find it a great place to sleep by occasionally. In our case, we have a separate room for the Firestar, and people occasionally sleep by it. But what I want to do is, back a few years ago, I had a radio show and K-Fox, which I mentioned earlier, and I want to play a little excerpt about the Firestar Orb now, so that you can, I think I brought some good points out, and I was going through my old radio series while I was reviewing and putting this tape together. So I think you'll find in it a lot of good information. So now we're going to take a break from this part of the tape and go listen to one of my old radio shows.
And it is now a few minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, which means your talk alternative now continues with Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Now live from Laguna Beach, California, here is Dr. Fred Bell. Good morning, Dr. Bell.
Good morning, Jim. How are we doing today?
We are doing fine. How are the rains?
Oh, it's pretty nice. It's not really raining right now, but it sure has been. And it sure is nice seeing that, you know, last year we only had like one day of rain.
Yes.
And this year we're having many.
Well, I hope we get a lot. I like rain.
Yeah, I do too. It's lots of a good source of negative ions. And plus, it raises the vibration of everything up a whole lot.
I don't know if you had had a chance to catch any of the Elizabeth show this morning.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of it this morning.
We had quite a seminar last night on, you know, my favorite subject.
I know. It sounds like it was a real crazy one, huh?
It was wild. I've got a very interesting tape I'm going to be playing on the air in a couple weeks, or maybe when I get back from my vacation in Chicago, that I think you're going to be interested in.
Oh, sounds good. What's the tape about?
I think I've told you and our listeners know a little bit about the UFO landing outside RAF Bentwaters. Well, this is a tape of the commanding officer of that base at the time.
Uh-huh.
Making his investigation, and he put his investigation as he was making it in the field on cassette.
Right.
It was done at night. You hear the investigation going on. All of a sudden, the commanding officer and his men spot mysterious lights.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
And it is extremely dramatic. And we'll, I don't know if the CNN is doing a story on this also. They may beat us to the punch, but certainly they're the ones that have really helped Larry Fawcett, the original investigator in the case, unearth so much. And anyway, we can look forward to that.
When you play that, I'll get one of my Semyasi tapes with the sounds of the Pleiadian ships that we've played on the air here a couple times.
And we'll do a little mix or something, huh?
Yeah, we'll just put a little special effects on the maybe we should use that for an opener for my show.
Now that would be interesting.
I've been wanting to put a special effects tape together for a long time just to have it on my show just to wake people up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun. I remember when we did Aspen, I did Pepke Auditorium in Aspen, Colorado, back in 79, I think it was. We had a situation like you guys had last night. The place holds 1,200. We had to turn 600 away, and we had 1,800 in there. That's how hungry people are for UFO information. It's amazing.
Well, again, it was quite a situation. We had, it looked like the opening of 2010. I mean, people were wrapped around the block, and there was a lot of confusion and stuff. And again, I'd like to publicly thank everyone that came last night, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Well, I hope that everybody later on, when in about 2 or 3 weeks, when I've come out with my new catalogs, which we're in the process of doing now, in them are pictures, you know, photographs of some of the exotic systems that we've used around the world for these kinds of things. And some of the people are would be considered very well-known public central figures that are using the systems but want to remain anonymous. But some of the equipment that they're using will be pictured in their new systems catalog and is now becoming available. I've had 2 or 3 devices that I really haven't made available to what I would call my general following in the UFO area. One of them is a unit that's quite large. It's a unit called a Firestar Orb. You've never seen anything like it. It wouldn't even fit in your studio because it's too big. It wouldn't go through the door. But it's a device that works a whole lot like, you know, how a flower attracts at a certain point the bee to it to do the pollination, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this device was given to me by the extraterrestrials quite a few years ago in this design, and there's only been probably 5 or 6 of them ever built in the whole world, and one of them was installed up in a house in Winding Way up in Malibu, a huge home way up over the cliff, and the guy that put it in kind of knew what he was doing, but he sort of wanted to believe it, but he couldn't believe it could happen to him. And this device uses, in the center of it, it's like a giant cross. You know, those radiators in my living room?
Yes.
Okay, well, there's like a giant cross there. And this cross is it's in that shape of the irradiator, but on each corner of the arm of the cross is a octahedral chamber formed of 24 karat gold pyramids. And the cross itself is structured and it has the stainless steel wires, but it has a high tension suspension so you can touch these wires. It sounds like a sitar. It's a very high tension, so the whole thing is like a huge crystal. And in the very center part of it, we put a diamond in it. It has diamonds in it, like 2 and 3 carat flawless cut diamonds are suspended, once again on a very tight suspension made up of a special wax-covered thread. And the whole system is carried up to about a 30,000 volt charge. And in each one of these quadrants of the octahedrons on each one of the corners of the unit has different gemstones. We'll put sapphires, rubies, emeralds, opals, whatever, all the way around. So we'll have 4 different opposing stones on each of the corner quadrants and this huge diamond that we use in the center. And then it's charged and it's suspended at sort of hung on the wall at a straight up and down position, like a completely vertical position. It's tilted back so that if you stood away from it, it would be looking at you, yet the back of the thing would be pointing up into space. And then what we do is we fire in this case, in the beginning days of these things, we were using a helium neon laser. And the helium neon laser, the first one we did was up at Aspen, Colorado. We shoot the helium neon laser right directly into the diamond in the center. And what happens is the diamond in the center then diffuses the energy, and certain amounts of it hit these different 4 different stones in the outer quadrants of the unit. This then sets up a resonant pattern that begins to oscillate and vibrate, and it increases energy at a pretty high rate of speed. And an analogy to that would be looking in the human body at the base of the spine, at the lowest chakra, the root chakra, we have what's called a 4-petal lotus. And what that means is there are 4 glands, the adrenals, the spleen, the liver, and the kidneys, that work in conjunction with one another in the bottom of the human body. And when these organs are stimulated by certain kinds of coherent radiation, which we were talking about yesterday, they cause a flow of cerebral spinal fluid to begin to move up through the bone networks, the spinal column networks, up through the base of the spine. And finally, this spinal network, this fluid, which has been released from the bottom of the spine, reaches a point at the base of the brain, at the cerebellum. Then what happens is the brain opens up. It changes its resistance. In other words, there's a certain amount of resistance when you're waking up in the morning. Your brain, it seems clear once you get going and the adrenaline gets up there, versus at the end of the day, you've had a lot of input and you can hardly, you're kind of foggy.
Mine works just the opposite.
Well, okay, because you're polarized backwards. But anyway, what happens is the resistance inside the brain changes when this adrenaline comes in. And what happens is the neurons in the brain then start switching at different speeds, which then links human consciousness to higher octaves into the universe. It's like a comparison of that would be someone taking LSD or psilocybin. It causes a change because LSD and psilocybin will mock up or fake out the brain as far as the serotonin structure is concerned because they look very similar to it. But what happens is the consciousness of the user actually changes. But in the case of adrenaline or the movement of the kundalini, this is a natural change. It's not a drug-related change. It's an automatic change that takes place, which then sends out or causes a person, in the case of consciousness, to be aware, to have a cosmic awareness, to have the third eye open, to have all these things happening. And then what happens is electromagnetic energies move with less and less resistance up and down the spinal column, so that you end up with a screening across the entire gray matter of these electromagnetic energies. It's almost like a waveform. So what happens is the gray matter is now illuminated or activated or turned on or switched on or lit up or whatever your terminology would be. And so this then causes the consciousness of the body to become awakened into this higher realm of knowledge. Now, in the case of a lot of ET contacts, a lot of these people that have been contacted on a what I would call a steady basis and have been proven to be credible type of contactees have had have gone through this change. Like, for example, when the Montgomery lady writes about those books on ETs and Brad Steiger, all of these people have had some kind of a higher awakening. Well, the Firestar orb works on the principle of the excite, if you what I would call the excitation field, whereby this energy is moved up the base of the spine. But instead of moving it up the base of the spine, because this is something that's suspended in a building, it causes the entire building to start vibrating using the core frequencies of the earth. And so when the core frequencies of the earth are tapped into by this kind of a device, what happens is it sends out like a beacon out into space. It goes all the way out. You know, it's quite interesting. It's the way this thing works. This beacon then sets up an energy that if the, you know, the locality is such that it can handle this kind of energy, there's a veil that is lifted, and there's a lot more UFO activity. You know, in some cases, for example, people that have opened astral vision, for example, could see a UFO, and another person standing right next to them couldn't see it. Yet, you could have two or three people agreeing that they're actually seen or have seen a UFO, and one or two people that haven't seen anything. And the ones that saw it, it might have been just like a very quick flash, because motion in and out of the astral plane is like breathing, but it takes very quickly. In other words, it takes place very quickly, this actual breath of the universe, our own breathing cycle. If you realize how quick the moment that you breathe in and you start breathing out, there's a very fast transaction between the moment you let the air out and the moment it starts coming in. In other words, the rate, the diaphragm. Now, the diaphragm, for example, in the body could move very slowly, but because it's a large surface area located at the base of the lungs. But looking at the passageways, the small passageways whereby the air, the high velocity of the air comes into the nose, the switching speed and the velocity of the hair going through the venturis of the nose is quite high in relationship to the speed of the diaphragm. It's the same thing that happens with some of these UFO sightings when they move onto the physical and onto the astral and back and forth. So you have to be somewhat attuned to this to actually see it, unless it's a full-blown knockout, drag-out sighting like we do occasionally have, where masses of people, you know, are just there and they're seeing it, because it's just a complete drop from that higher plane into this dimension that we're in now, which we're getting more and more of those sightings. So these are the kinds of things that have to be taken into consideration there. I remember back when we were doing spoon bending classes up at Lake Tahoe, sometimes we would have witnesses to our class. And when Lawrence Kennedy or one of the students would get up there and bend the spoon, you know, some people would come to our classes and they would be taking the classes, but other people, their friends, would be there for part of the class, and they would just be utter disbelievers. In their mind, it was absolutely impossible for them to witness the phenomenon of a spoon being bent by mental energy. And so what would happen is Lawrence would sometimes grab the spoon for a skeptic, put it right in front of his face, and the moment that spoon would bend, the person would blink their eyes, they would turn their heads, or they would become distracted. I've seen that time and time again, and we would talk about that phenomenon, and that person's spirit just isn't ready to witness that degree of advancement, because that is almost like an initiation when you actually begin to see this happening. The same thing happens with the extraterrestrials because of our relationship in the universe right now. Some people just aren't ready for it. Some people try to be ready for it. They get caught in the fever of the group and the enthusiasm of the group, but when the actual encounter comes, they can't be there. They have to leave. They have to come and then leave right away. There's a million different excuses that people will conjure up because they're really not ready for that fast vitality or that high vitalizing of their bodies yet. They're still working out earthly karma. So anyway, the Firestar was one application of the laser, and we put one in Hawaii. But anyhow, getting back up to the one in Malibu, when we installed that one, that was number two, the second one to ever be built in this world. This guy that I put it in his house, he was a big businessman over in Century City. And one of the guys that was working with him was a medical doctor. He was probably one of the most grounded out medical doctors that I've ever met. He was a nice guy, you know, these nice guy types, very professional, but not even about to hear anything that he didn't want to hear, or if it wasn't written in a medical textbook. This guy could barely handle vitamins, you know. He believed they were good, but he didn't know why, because they don't teach nutrition. And he was very grounded out. Well, one morning about 3 o'clock in the morning, I got this call. And you got to realize that this doctor was like the kind of guy that after 8 o'clock, he never called you, because he was like totally respective of people's time, and he never called you before, say, 8 o'clock in the morning. Here I get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and this guy is on the phone. He sounds like he's having a nervous breakdown, you know. And I asked him, I said, John, what are you calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning? This is completely out of your character pattern. And he's like freaked, and he says, Fred, I didn't believe you, but now I do. Because what had happened is some kind of a UFO had come up the coast from Malibu, from Point Dune down there. They said where they first saw it, because they were, I guess, having a couple of drinks or something late at night. It came up and came outside the house, and this house was like sitting by itself on about 20 acres of land. And this thing proceeded to go around the house, and the house had like skylights in it, and there was a red glow coming down through the skylights into the house. At first they said they felt something, and they looked up at the machine because the laser was bright red where it hit that diamond. It was glowing. But then they looked out the skylights, and they thought that outside the skylights was a continuation of the reflection of the diamond being struck by this red laser. But it wasn't. It was this outside vehicle that was feeding back red light back into it. And another interesting experience that we had happen was up at Aspen. And this is where we learned how to transmit back and forth. This is back in the early days of, you know, what I would call heavy group communication. We built a machine. I've got pictures of it here. We were up in an area called Bluebell, right up by a pyramid, a place called Pyramid Peak. And we were up about 9,500 feet up. And we had a series of irradiators, and one of these fire stars pointed out at this point over the Pyramid Peak. And we began to see some lights up there. It was too far away to make out any physical size of the craft that we saw. We could just see some lights that were in a pattern, and they were quite a bit brighter than Jupiter. And this was an evening when we were experimenting around with the ionizer, but it wasn't like an ordinary ionizer that you've seen. This was like a 50 kV ionizer, and we were pulsating it. We were actually turning it off and on with a key switch so that the entire system built up a field and then dropped the field. And we found that if we could pulse it 3 or 4 times, the twinkle or the lights out above the Pyramid Peak would absolutely go into the same pattern. So we began to establish this transmission pattern back and forth. And this was not a mental type communication. This was hard physical communication. And the next morning in the Aspen paper carried a large article about these mysterious lights that had been seen hovering over the town that night. So these are just a couple of the experiences that we've had with the things like the fire star. So I finally decided I might as well make it available to a few more people.
Dr. Bell, before we continue with that, I would like to take a time out for something that is very important. That is a word from Excalibur. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show right after this.
This seminar series is continued on the next tape.
Well, we'll jump right on over here to the next one now. I just wanted to repeat that one because it didn't come out that good last week. Now we'll jump on into 17A. We're into the last 2 hours of this seminar series. I hope you're enjoying it. We're queuing it up. And since then, we've had a lot of other experiences, very similar. Right now, as we speak, on May 6, 2007, a couple of my friends are having incredible, almost daily UFO experiences, one out in Silverado Canyon, and a couple up here in the town. So there's actually a tremendous amount of activity going on as we speak. We've got a four-system holographic projector system set up in the Vortex upstairs, which is in addition to the Firestar and all the other things you've been hearing about. So things are moving rather quickly now, which is, I guess, what's pretty much in store for all of us. So here we go into the last 2 hours of the seminar. Thank you. Hope you're enjoying it. BBSradio.com, where everything happens anytime.
to introduce proudly my wife, Frauke Bell, the little lady that I met in Germany during a UFO invasion, who is in charge of the sales of the Fire Star Division of Paradigm. And, of course, you've heard her voice on the Fellowship, Atlantis Rising, and this tape is continued on the other side, or the other tape is continued on the next tape. I'm sure you've heard her voice several times. And here's Frauke. Here's Frauke.
Hi, my name is Frauke Plug-Bell. I'm Dr. Fred Bell's wife, and we have been working together for the past 3 years now. For the following 15 minutes, I'm going to talk about the Firestar Orb system. The Firestar Orb system is a Pleiadian energy device which was first developed in the early 80s. Like other devices as the irradiator, which works on the principle of a scalar wave to manifest thoughts instantaneously, the Firestar Orb was given to Dr. Fred Bell to serve a specific purpose. The original function of this rather big device was to attract Pleiadian spacecraft and to be able to establish contact with extraterrestrial beings. Only a frequency on a higher energy level will allow us to enter the energy field of extraterrestrials like the Pleiadians. This means that we have to raise our frequency to attune to different levels of consciousness within the universe. Dr. Bell already spoke about the technical part of the Firestar Orb and how it affects the human body and the whole environment in which it is set up. I would like to share with you some of my own experiences I've had since I started working with this wonderful, very powerful Pleiadian device. My personal system is set up in a room which is basically dedicated to the Firestar Orb system. It is a place I come to in order to relax, to be creative as a writer, or to experience higher states of consciousness. Most of our Firestar Orb systems are custom made and personalized. The energy chambers, this is how I would like to call the pyramid octahedrons in the four corners and in the center of the Firestar Orb, are attuned to the person's needs at a given time. In each energy chamber, we have a different gemstone depending on the color frequency we are trying to create. The octahedron will amplify the frequency of the color and also the properties of the particular gemstone. The octahedron in the center of the Firestar Orb represents the heart of the device and has therefore a predominant significance. It becomes the focal point of our meditation and will permit us to connect with our own higher consciousness. In the center of my personal Firestar Orb, we'll find a unity of three fire agates from Mexico. The fire agate is a gemstone which is composed of various colors. It includes the colors of all seven rays of consciousness. Depending on the stone itself, one color or another will be predominating. Since we are dealing with a high sensitive energy device, which amplifies the given energies hundredfold, not only the color frequency and the characteristics of the stone, but also the place where it was found is extremely important. I purchased my stones from Miss Terry, the spiritual advisor for Paradigm Systems. She uses only gems which come from places of a positive earth vibration. Miss Terry also helped me to find the types of gemstones I needed and told me for how long I would be working with these before it would be necessary to change them. The installation of the gemstones is not meant to be of permanent nature. As we work with the Firestar Orb, the vibratory rate of our cells in the body will change. Let's say we wanted to open our third eye, the seat of the pineal gland. In that case, a possible stone would be smoky quartz. After a certain period of time, the third eye is open, and we could now concentrate on a different chakra. The crown chakra, located on the top of our head, is the main chakra. It affects the other nine chakras and is represented by the color white. The color white is not considered a color by itself, but a summation of all seven colors. It is represented by the diamond or other gemstones with equal properties like, for instance, the Herkimer diamond. The use of synthetic stones is possible since we are looking for the color frequency. Thus, we recommend genuine gemstones, which would be more potent in the Firestar orb. It is also the energy of the gemstone itself we are looking for in our three-dimensional work with this device. Since the diamond is affecting all chakras at once, it becomes a very powerful energy within the Firestar orb system. Some people underestimate the potency of the diamond in conjunction with the Firestar orb or the nuclear receptor we've already heard about on a previous tape. That's why I would suggest to you to work with a specialist like Ms. Terry or somebody you know who would be competent and trustworthy. A selection of the wrong gemstones could be harmful to you and cause dysfunctional behaviors or even physical pain. I'm not stressing on this to scare you, but I would like you to be aware of the Firestar orb's potency and to learn to respect it. The Firestar orb by itself doesn't represent a complete Firestar system. A second device, the so-called Star Shield, is a very important piece for the system's completion. The Star Shield will receive the from the Firestar projected energy and reflect this energy back into the field where the meditating person is located. This unit has in its center two pyramids in a geometric form of the Star of David. In the three-dimensional Star of David configuration, you'll find a double-terminated crystal set in spirals of two different metals, each coming from the opposite direction of the pyramid star. The coils characterize the frequencies which create an acceleration of thoughts or feelings and allow us to speed up time and to enter higher dimensions. With the beginning of this decade, time started to speed up dramatically so that every one of us could physically feel it. We are now on the planet Earth making the transition from the third into the fourth dimension. The Firestar system will allow us to experience higher dimensions for moments at a time. This form of traveling in various dimensions is giving us the opportunity to gain knowledge we could not achieve with our limited minds. In all paradigm systems, we're using a combination of sound, light, crystals, gems, and pyramid structures. Lasers are the light source for the Firestar system. Red helium or green and blue, krypton argon lasers, or any other available colors can be used. The beam of the laser will enhance the energy field of the crystal or gemstone. For instance, if we use a green laser in a diamond, so will the color green focus on the female energy, the energy of the Holy Ghost in the Christian belief system. Green is a very harmonious, soft energy with great healing abilities. It also will open up the realm of the fourth dimension and give us a deeper understanding of its reality. In conjunction with the diamond as a gemstone, the color green will affect all chakras simultaneously. The acceleration of time happens now in zero time, which means that our physical bodies have to be perfectly aligned in order to be prepared for this powerful boost of energies. The color red is a male energy, representing the father energy in Christianity. Red focuses on the willpower and brings us to the edge of the fourth dimension. It opens the first door of the next possible dimension, whereas the color green opens the second door, which brings us deeper into another dimension. These are the main colors I've been working with in conjunction with the Firestar orb. This interpretation of the colors is one way of experiencing it, but there are many other ways which I consider just as valid. Other colors as blue or yellow or violet would be also wonderful colors to use with the Firestar orb. Lasers create a light in a crystal or gemstone
which could never be reached with a regular color bulb. The laser beam brings out the energy of the crystal or gem and multiplies it hundredfold. This energy becomes visible around the crystal or gem and can be even seen more clearly when smoke of incense or a fog machine is used. The longer we focus the laser beam on the crystal, the larger becomes the energy field around it. Since the Firestar orb is a device which projects and reflects energies, it is a good idea to have a mirror behind the Firestar orb. In my personal system, I created a mirror art piece which represents the universe with its star systems of the Pleiades and Andromeda, extraterrestrial civilizations I've been learning from. The mirror behind the Firestar orb will reflect our own thoughts and feelings and therefore allow us to learn more about our own existence and purpose here on Earth. The mirror also adds to the multidimensional experience we are reaching for and gives us greater results with the lasers we are using. At last, we are adding the element of sound to our multidimensional system. Pyridyne Studios created a special sound and music using chord structures and timbres which will alter our state of consciousness. The music will affect our body cells just as the pyramids, the crystals, and the laser lights and help us tremendously on our journey in other dimensions. The unity of all these elements puts us into a state of consciousness where only beauty reigns. Oftentimes it is hard to readjust to our existing reality, so that we have to give ourselves time to slowly come back into our daily lives. In our intensives, we give people the opportunity to experience the Firestar orb system. We also teach all our Firestar system users how to make the system work for themselves. And further, we connect them with other people who have personal experiences with the Firestar orb system. The linkage of all the different systems and people who use them makes each one of the systems more powerful and gives us greater results on a personal level. I hope you enjoyed my talk on the Firestar orb system, and I also hope that you will have the opportunity one day to experience this wonderful multidimensional device on your own.
Thank you very much, Franca Bell, for that lovely explanation about the Firestar. And Franca is our system specialist on the Firestar, and she can be reached at area code 714-499-2603. Mrs. Terry, the lady that helps people align their chakras with the Firestar to determine which set of minerals or gemstones will augment that person's consciousness the best, can be reached in Hawaii. Her number is area code 808-947-3929, or her crystal and gem shop, if she's not at that number, usually has an 8 to 5 answering person, area code 808-524-3066. Once again, I'll repeat those numbers. Franca is at 714-499-2603. Mrs. Terry is at 808-947-3929. Or 808-524-3066. Now I'm going to talk about the X1. Moving right along here, I'm going to talk a little bit about one of our other projects. Myself and Pyridyne have long been involved with a lot of projects that aren't quite at what I would call a public domain level yet, and they're in the research phases. One of these is an interesting one. It's called the X1 Healing Machine. Now, the X1 Healing Machine, you know, if you look at the videotape that's provided with this tape series, you'll see in there some pictures of the X1 Healing Machine. And a lot of the things that I'll be talking to in this section, you'll be able to see pictures of it. And some more detailed explanations will be present on the X1, on the different things that you'll see. The X1 Healing Machine was The original concept was given to Fred Hart and Thomas Colson back in the 40s, and they channeled it from some Venusian entity that they were dealing with. It was originally called the Deep Polar Ray, and it had the X1 healing system has seven different tubes on it, or ray machines that output tubes on it. They originally worked up the concept for the first tube, and if you haven't seen the tape yet, the video series yet, and you don't quite know what I'm talking about visually, just imagine that you have a giant banana in your room standing 6 feet tall. And in this banana are seven different television screens. And each television screen is capable of producing seven different sublevels of the color of the rainbow, meaning that the first television screen, which is at the top of the banana looking at you, and you're looking at the curved side of the banana. So you stand a 6 foot banana up, and you look at the curved side, so it's like the curved side of it with the inside curve is pointed at you. The outside, which would be the bow side of it, would be towards the back, away from you. And you divide it into seven, so you have seven large screens that take up the entire length of this banana. Each one of these screens, when the banana isn't turned on, is one of the colors of the rainbow. So the first seventh screen, which is one of seven, is red. The next one, of course, would be orange, and then yellow, and then green, and then shades of blue and violet in that manner. And then if you were to turn it on, each one of the color screens is capable of, like the red could go from the very edge of ultraviolet all the way down into the edge of orange. And in this manner, the entire rainbow could be flashed before you. And what this machine does is it puts out sound, light, and color radiation, coherent radiation, that are in perfect harmony and octave-wise keyed together. So in other words, we talked about the sounds, which you've experienced in the tape already. The color, which some of it you'll see in some of the slides, and some of the laser pictures that are in the slides and the videotape. And all of the other things, the radiation, of course, you won't experience. And we're not talking about a detrimental form of radiation. We're talking about a healing form of radiation. So originally what happened was they built up basically part of the red tube, and they called it the Deep Polar Ray back in the 40s. And the idea of it was to counteract the effects of arthritis on people. And the tube had a 44 megahertz carrier on it. And the machine did work, and it worked quite effectively. But what happened was the FDA stepped in about 1948 or 1949 and said that they couldn't manufacture this machine and sell it to the public because it was, beyond their comprehension. So as a result of that, in protest, they formed what's known today as the National Health Federation, which I mentioned earlier. And a lot of people aren't aware because the National Health Federation is a group of people that has a lobbyist in the Congress, and it has long been representing people and the health freedoms around the country, but it had extraterrestrial roots. So as a result of the earlier X-D1 Deep Polar Ray research, I got with Semyasi. Semyasi began to educate me on the propulsion systems of the Pleiadian ships and the process of this propulsion educational series that I got from her. I began to understand more what the X1 is all about, so we went ahead and developed the concept of what was known as the X1 healing machine. And what it does basically is it analyzes, it sends in energy into the body, it photographs the energy while it's in the body, it looks at how the body distorts the photograph, and then what it does is it creates a printout in a computer of the compensation that the body needs to augment the distortion that it's read or registered, and then it reprojects the body energies back into the body with the proper corrections in, which then causes the body to become healed. Now, once again, this is not something that's going to heal you, but it's going to greatly enhance the body's ability to heal itself. It's going to be, it overcomes one of the dimensions in space, and that is time, that slows down the healing process. And the way it works very basically is that it has the ability to put out coherent radiations in all different aspects of any three-dimensional, four-dimensional requirement the body needs. For example, if the patient came up to it and looked at it when we were doing a sound diagnosis, what we would, first of all, we would look at or diagnose every single hydrogen atom in the body and how it behaves with its phase shift. Remember, we talked about how the hydrogen atom should behave. It should be red in the morning at the nucleus, violet out at the electron, and through the day rotate 180 degrees, and through the night 180 degrees again on its phase. Of course, the hydrogen atom is part of oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen. These four elements combine themselves to create every cell in the body. Everything that's in the body is made from this, so we work with basics. So what we do is we turn on the extreme red portion of the tube, have the patient stare at it. The patient may think that they're looking at an orange or maybe even yellow color, but in fact, we know what they're looking at. They're looking at the color red. And the tube, of course, has gases in it so that we can vary the intensity. The gases range from about 6,563 angstroms down to about 4,000 angstroms, which takes us all the way from orange into ultraviolet. And when these gases are, the proper gases are in there, it works something like a dye laser in the fact that the light output is adjusted by the type of gas that's in the tube. So what we're able to do is vary the gas in the tube and the optical portions of it, and this causes a beam to project out. So by regulating and knowing the gas type and the angstrom level of the light being emitted from the output tube, we know exactly what color frequency is being emitted. It doesn't matter what the senses think it is. So if the person was looking at red, what happens is the color red, the sound that correlates to red, which we talked about earlier, which would be A, would be coming out of the body. I mean, coming out of the machine, going into the eyes, going into the ears, and filling the five senses. The person's hand is hooked into a chamber, which you can see alongside of the X1. This chamber is like a closed-circuit Corellian photography camera. It also senses other things, and we're able to sense the aura field change down on the hand with a closed-circuit TV. The hand is in a airtight, dark, like a miniature dark room. And, of course, the information coming off the camera from the person's aura field recorded off their hand or foot, depending on what part of the body that we're picking up data from, is sent into a computer database. Then what we do is we switch it on down to green, which is the center of the tubes, and the center part of the banana section there is green, which is the center of the hydrogen atom. We do this, repeat the process there, notice if there's any differences there or not, and then we bring it down into violet and do the same thing in the violet region. This gives us a complete spectrum of what shortcomings this person has, and then what we do is we make a correlation, and rather than recording any more information, we put the patient inside this, looks like a bathtub, which has a perfect acid alkaline solution in it, and then the large tube is then brought over the top of the tub where the person is now laying, and the proper radiations are re-administered back into the body, as they're written up or designed on the computer to do so from the data bank. So if the person, let's say, is low in orange, we give them a huge amount of orange energy. If they're low on red, we give them extra red energy, and plus all the sounds and colors and everything else that goes along with it. The X1, depending on how powerful the radiations are, can be adjusted. And so the X1, because of its design and its integrity, can rearrange the molecular structure of the body within seconds. So if it might have taken the body normally, let's say, 2 weeks to perform this healing that was necessary to bring this person back around into proper alignment, the X1 would be able to do it in a minute or two. There are more crude forms of this equipment on the planet. For example, in Germany, there's a company over there that makes Moray therapy equipment. And let's say, for example, that you had a shoulder pain. The proper frequency for muscular contraction in the body without pain would be something under 18 cycles. If the body starts receiving too much electrical stimuli from an outside source.
Well, that's all there is time for here. BBS Radio, we will continue this and the remainder hour and a half in 2 weeks. So hopefully we'll be seeing you at the Sound Healing Conference. Until then, we'll talk soon. You've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show on BBS Radio and 1340 Tan Talk Radio. Bye.